Everybody, welcome to C3. I'm Kent Dobson. I am really excited to be talking again today. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for being a part of this place. If this is your first time listening to one of our ongoing teachings, check us out on the web, c3westmichigan.org, or check our Facebook page where we have every single week, Sundays at 10 a.m., we have a talk by either me or someone else. Very interesting guests, and we've had some really intriguing guests the last couple of weeks, so make sure you check that out if you missed it. And of course, this talk is always followed by our musicians, sometimes local, sometimes not. Really important just to be supporting and listening to our artistic voices in the world right now, needed now more than ever. So anyway, I guess I also want to say thanks for supporting this place. Thanks for helping us survive 2020 and also thrive. I think some of the things that we're offering and ways that we're interacting, I've found great support from during this past year, and I hope you have too. And thanks for helping us make it to 2021, and we're looking forward to another interesting year. In fact, if you are a regular part of C3, even if you're just joining online, make sure you sign up for our newsletter. It's the most informative and interesting thing that we put out every single week. It's the way to stay up to date. In that, you'll also see a link for our annual meeting. Of course, ordinarily, we'd have our annual meeting in person in Grand Haven, Michigan. This year, we're doing it virtually via Zoom. But it's a really important part of the business of this place and board members. And we have an award that we give out every year, and a chance to talk about where are we going in 2021 and beyond. So make sure you join that. Don't forget about it. The date is February 7th. So that it's coming up pretty quickly. So I'm in the middle of a year-long series that I'm calling Meaning Matters. And the word for this month, for January, is truth. Very timely, an important thing to be wrestling with and talking about and digging into. And today, I wanted to try to respond to some things that I'm hearing, particularly in the talk back, which happens at 11 o'clock following this every single week. We get together and talk about what we heard in today's teaching. So anybody's welcome to join. You just have to have our newsletter for the link. One of the things that I've been hearing is something like this: how do I talk to the other side? But more than that, not just a how-to, there's a kind of despair that seems to be settling in among so many, that the other side, so to speak, is unreachable or so far on another planet, you know, we can barely see or hear one another anymore. And so the first thing I want to sort of say is that true? And also, I feel your pain, you know. Part of having a family and part of having a work life is you're stuck together with people you wouldn't ordinarily. Well, family is maybe a little different, but I guess you wouldn't, so maybe it still applies. You wouldn't choose them necessarily. You don't say, well, of the kinds of brothers I'd like to have this kind and this kind. But no, family happens to us. And work life, in many respects, happens to us. And sometimes even neighborhoods. Now, maybe some of you have the financial freedom where you can choose where you would like to live, or the school system, or the neighborhood. Many people do not have that choice. So, or it's not a wise choice, you could say. And you're just, you find yourself in communities that you don't get to curate. Now, we try to online. That's one of, I think, the dangers of too much time online. You can curate your entire life, who your friends are and the voices you hear. And that's, of course, exacerbating the problem that I'm trying to describe. But here we are just lodged together. And how do we talk? How do we learn? How do we carry on the basic asks of responsible citizenship. How do we get along in this democracy? And I don't know how you've been feeling this week with the massive transition in administration. And what I mean, you might have felt some joy, you might have felt some sadness, you might have felt some confusion, you might have felt some hope or relief. I don't know. If you're like me, I felt conflicting and complex emotions, and I had conflicting and complex ideas. And part of that is that I'm a little afraid that the partisanship will just continue. And the us versus them, right versus left, will not change at all. In fact, maybe now that the Democrats have the power, you know, the right will go on the defensive, and it'll be just as polarizing and just as demonizing and just as scapegoat oriented. And we're already beginning to see that. I mean, so one of the reasons why I want to wrestle maybe with this question, how do we talk to the other side, so to speak, is because it really matters. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about preserving democracy and not letting it slip through our fingers. And I think that's a fair fear. And one of the questions is, of course, what can we do politically? How can we vote and organize and lobby and hold people accountable and support the good elements of our system? No system is pure, of course, or even good always. But the other is just personal responsibility. And a lot of what I'm going to say is how do I want to engage in the next 4 years? So that's kind of a long 7-minute introduction. And I'm going to go kind of fast at this point because I actually have 15 points. I have 15 things that I've been thinking about. And I don't want to inundate you with all this stuff, but I think each of them maybe just has a right to be said. And maybe just ask yourself, which of these do I resonate with? Which of these feels like an invitation, or which ones feel like an invitation? Maybe all 15 feel like an invitation or a reminder. I guess let me just get right into it. Here's point number one. What would it look like to commit to the value of listening? What would it look like to commit to the value of listening? I want to be a better listener this year, 2021. And I want to be a better listener the next 4 years. And even some sort of relationship 101, like if you've been to counseling, you've been to therapy, or even if you've read a marriage book, you probably know the basics of how to hear and how to speak in a way that both parties are understood. So why not just apply this at the larger level? Things like, I hear you saying, and maybe the more important one, I'll only mention two. I hear you saying, and here's the more important one. Did I get that right? So I hear you saying, dot, 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 did I get that right? See, that alone, I feel like that alone, just on the interpersonal level, how much more on our media outlets or something like that, on the personal level, how much would that change the temperature of the tensions in our country and even the tensions that are global? After all, we live on the globe, on the planet. And it's funny because in some respects, you know, Donald Trump saying America first, all of us on the right or the left became that kind of focused on just us. And that's maybe just an aside from what I'm saying, but we'll never get there listening to another country, another civilization, even a neighbor, if we can't do it around the work, you know, water cooler, whatever they say, or at the Thanksgiving table. So maybe just to be more straightforward, I want to try to be a better listener. And that means also I'm going to have to listen to people that I don't always agree with. I mean, I don't always agree with myself, so there's also that. Okay, number two, something that's been pushing on me a bit. I would like to avoid using religious language inside the political sphere. That is on the rise. One of the things I think that's interesting about the experiment that is America is the separation of church and state. And it's always fragile. I mean, all systems are fragile. All systems have the capacity to break down and be renewed and refreshed. So there's always a mixing of religion and politics in American language. You know, people praying before they begin certain things and this sort of stuff. But my point is how religious language has crept into how we talk about democracy. For example, people say, well, voting is a sacred right. I think, huh, that's interesting. It's a sacred right. It's infusing it with a kind of theology. Or when the Capitol building was stormed, people said, in the sacred and hallowed walls of the Senate chamber, as if the Senate chamber or the House or something was a religious sanctuary, like as if they had entered the Holy of Holies. See, I think part of the reason why people use this language is that my personal belief is that people have a religious impulse. It's part of the innate human story. That's why you find religions in every culture. Even atheism is a kind of religion in terms of its beliefs and value structures and ideas that people are sometimes zealously devoted to. So it's more of an impulse. And that's a problem when it comes to how we then think about democracy, because what happens in unhealthy religions is that once you're in the sacred chamber, you begin to divide up the world between who is a part of the right religion and who is a part of the wrong religion, and that's immature religion around the world. And then suddenly you're into scapegoating and violence toward the other side, and it's the good versus the evil. And that's what politics has become. And I think part of the reason the good versus evil, the righteous versus the unrighteous, part of what's contributed to that is the creeping in of religious language. Start listening. You'll start hearing, wait a minute. They're talking as if their political party is a religion. So that's something I think we can back away from. It's not too late. Number three, switch to long format news if you want to understand an issue. Make the switch to long format. One of the things that I really, really became obvious to me over the last 4 years is that MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News don't do long format pieces so that you can understand an issue. They simply can't do it or they won't do it, so don't go to them. So you might go to CNN or whatever, Fox News, for something else, spin, commentary, or the urgent, you know, watch out, this is happening right now. Maybe they're good at that, but they're not good at long format. And we live at the beginning of a golden age where long format podcasts, long format news, long format articles, although, I mean, people don't read that much, but you don't need to be a reader. It's available. And actually, over the last couple of years, I just continue to look to different voices who want to have extended conversations, and it's happening. But it requires some discipline. If I want to understand an issue, I'm not going to go to these essentially corporations interested in making money. I'm not going to do that. In that sense, believe it or not, there's something to what Trump was saying about fake news. There's a fake element to it. When everything is just spin and urgency and opinion and no chance to settle into the nuances and the long format conversation. So, number four. Decide that I'd like to understand better the 70 million people who didn't vote like me, or the 80 million people that didn't vote like me, or the, well, what would the math be? another 150 to 200 million people that didn't vote? What if I just said, I'd like to understand better? That's it. Just, I'd like to understand people who didn't vote like me. See, setting that as an aim is much better than how people are behaving right now, which is either we won and we stuck it to them and now we've got all the power and up we go. What are you going to do with the millions of people who don't hold your particular views? Just not talk to them? Pretend they don't exist? That's what gave rise to Donald Trump in the first place. So maybe just a simple commitment. I want to try to understand. Not that I'll succeed, but I want to state that as a goal. Number five. I'd have a lot to say about this, so I'm only going to say a couple sentences. Understand that mob mentality is a real thing. Now, we've seen the worst of it with the Capitol riots and with when Black Lives Matter protests turned violent and burned cop cars and buildings and things like this. We've seen the worst of mob mentality on the television screen now. But don't think for a minute we might not be caught up in the same wildfire. We have some responsibility to understand the madness of crowds, so to speak. And social media is the gasoline for mob mentality. You might not even be marching in the streets. That doesn't mean you're not subject to it. So it's worth thinking about. That's as much I want to say about it right now. Number six. Here's a question from Brené Brown, which I highly recommend you listen to her podcast, by the way. I have two podcast recommendations. She just did a podcast on dehumanization. Check it out. Search for it. Brené Brown. Very interesting. Here's a question that came out of her podcast. Is this an attempt to dehumanize someone? Like whether it's what I'm saying or what I'm hearing from someone else or somebody's tweet, is this an attempt to dehumanize them in some way? Largely through name calling, it could be. Is this an attempt to dehumanize someone? And here's the second part. So that we can perpetuate violence, because that's where it leads. If I can dehumanize someone, then violence or subjugation or slavery or scapegoating or sending away is justified because they're less than human. And do not think human beings are above this. Do not think this is old. This is ever present. And I have to say, let's be honest. The left has used very, very dehumanizing language when it comes to the right, and particularly with Trump, while at the same time deriding and blaming Trump and some people on the right for their dehumanizing language. So this cycle doesn't work. And one of the things that I value and I think C3 is trying to promote in the world is our value of common humanity. Let's just not forget our common humanity. And maybe I ought to pay more careful attention to the way I speak about people, because if it dehumanizes them, it gives the small self, the ego, the frightened self, justification for a kind of violence. And we don't want that world. Number seven. This week, here's my other recommendation. I listened to an hour and a half of Glenn Beck and Eric Weinstein having a long-form conversation. Now, Glenn Beck of Fox News, or formerly of Fox News, and Eric Weinstein of the left intellectual, he's the one that coined the phrase, the intellectual dark web, having a long-format conversation. That's what I'm saying. It's happening. So anyway, one of the things I got from Eric Weinstein is he said one of the geniuses, potential geniuses of the American experiment is that something like three kinds of perspectives are at work. The libertarian, the conservative, and the liberal. You can use different words for all of those. But he said, in a way, the gift of the libertarians is the idea that we don't want to coerce people into something. Hey, that's an important part of the American experiment, and it represents certain perspectives, and there's value in that. And the conservatives are saying something like, let's not forget the lessons of the past. And that's valuable and that's needed and that's important. And the left or the liberal might be saying something like, watch out because systems can be oppressive. Now, which one of those and is the most important? Now, you might have an opinion. Well, I think whatever, this is the most important. And that just reveals your proclivities and your worldview and maybe your philosophy of life or something like that. But it doesn't mean that that's the only way this country should be run. So Weinstein is saying something like, even though he's very far left, is saying something like, we need all three voices. And when they're actually talking with one another, in the tension between those three, we can have something like a functioning democracy that has in mind the good of the most number of people. And that's, in a way, that you could say that's a kind of idealism, but it doesn't strike me that way. I think it's more of a, it can be more of a reality if we recognize that different voices are valuable. And let's not, if you're on the left or you're a Democrat, I don't think it's time to run through the streets for very long, celebrating, waving flags, we won, we won, it's over. What's over? It's only begun. And what will it be like to be in conversation in the weeks and months ahead? Number eight, I think it's time to give up the battle for who has the right version of history. Now, I say this as a student of history, who has a master's degree in history, who, you know, if I have my choice of books on the shelves, that's the direction I'm going to go. And this is something I learned from the Bible. History is complex because how we're finding out about what happened continues to change and evolve. And more than that, once you're really into history and a student of history, you're dealing with something like my sort of layering or my rubric here is something like an evolution of consciousness. You're peering into the past and you're seeing that people thought differently. It's not that they had the choices that we have today about worldview and they chose one versus the other, but something like worldview was developing. And it's hard to give the past any grace from the perspective of the 21st century. This is why people push statues into rivers and things like that. It's hard. It's hard. But if we only have the fight of who has the right version of history, like, is it, you know, is it your traditional textbook or is it Howard Zinn? Is it the 1619 Project or the 1776 Project? That's a small fight. It's something like nobody has the pure view of history. And in fact, it's time to say it's nuanced. We made, as Americans, hundreds of mistakes and hundreds of generative choices. Both. It's both. And that doesn't mean I let anyone off the hook. You want to challenge people for having a small worldview back then? Fine. Go ahead and challenge it. Say, I don't view the world that way. And it's had consequences. And we ought to look at what these consequences are. I think that is valuable. That discussion has to be had. But I think trying to only stick to one version creates further polarization. Let's just not play the game. Number nine. I think I'm on number nine. Yeah. There's a distinction between, or let me put it in the form of a sentence. Here's a distinction I think is important. A human being is more than their views. A human being is more than their views. A human being is more than their beliefs. One of the things that I've learned as kind of a guide and in my work at Animas Valley Institute in these kind of psycho-spiritual descent to soul kinds of experiences working with people in a one-on-one fashion, one of the things that you learn or in group settings is that you can't always trust what people say. and you could take this personally. You can't always trust what I'm saying. It's like, who is the one speaking here? Is it a wounded part? Is it a story? Is it a frightened part of this person? Is it a sub-personality? Is it the ego? Which part of this person is saying words or stating beliefs or stating values? And this is one of the great gifts of depth psychology in the 21st century. Human beings are complex. So if we could begin to say, somewhere, even behind people's views, is a human being, that's a massive step in the right direction. And maybe we ought to first start by extending some grace unto ourselves. I am more than what I say I believe. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay, number 10, which is related. My challenge for myself in 2021 is not to take the path of shame, not to use shame to deride and dehumanize people I disagree with. It's the easy path. And after 4 years of shame being passed back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, Trump using shame, or I remember when Betsy DeVos first took the job as education secretary, and she got out to visit a school, and there were protesters there, and they were screaming, shame, 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 shame. And I thought, okay, both sides using shame. So what if we didn't? And here's a distinction that I got from Brené Brown. She says something like, shame says you are a problem. Okay, you are a problem. You, the essence of your being, is a problem. That's a lot different than I disagree with you, or you have problems, like we all have problems. And when we go the path of fundamentally treating people like who they are in their essence is wrong or evil or dark or unredeemable, then we're playing the shame game. And that leads to increased dehumanization and to violence. Number 11, I told you I was gonna crank out a lot here. Number 11, I think it's time that we realize that our given worldview, Kent Dobson's worldview right here, and your worldview for that matter, probably, or we could say certainly, oppresses and excludes somebody, all right? There's no such thing, in other words, as the pure worldview that doesn't do any harm, because worldviews make judgments. Now, some judgments are needed and necessary, and some are unnecessary and blind, we could say. And part of being, I think, a person that does a searching moral and spiritual inventory is recognizing when their own worldview oppresses and excludes. But I think one of the problems we're seeing right now, it on the extremes, is that my worldview doesn't oppress anybody, your worldview does, and that doesn't get anywhere. Just, nope, my way of looking at things probably causes some suffering and harm in the world, and I'd like to find out what. See, that's what I mean. It takes the temperature down. It's like saying out loud, I might be wrong. Okay, who would ever thought such a 101 thing was needed in the world, but it is. Number 12. I don't know how you'll feel about this one, but number 12, life is unfair. Life is unfair. And it's biologically unfair at times. It's accidentally unfair. And you can say, what do you mean by fair? But accidents happen. Where you're born in the world and to whom, who your parents are and your zip code, that's kind of what I mean by unfair. It just fundamentally is. And we ought to be working to make our world as fair as possible for as many people as possible, especially those who have been the most forgotten and neglected and marginalized and ignored. And I'm saying that it's important to say both, because it's not true that we can ever get to the pure society. It's just really not. That's that utopian fantasy. And the problem with any utopian fantasy, the problem is human beings, you know, just our raw humanness. That's the problem with the utopian fantasy. You can have all the right structures and born into those structures are human beings. So I think it's time, at least from my point of view, is to say, yep, life is unfair and it's continued to be so, and I'm going to be the kind of person that works to try to right those wrongs where we can. So number 13, it's kind of something that was going with number 9, distinction between that a human being is more than their views. So here's a slightly better way of saying it. Number 13, we need a shift in consciousness, and it has to start at home. And it has to start with, I am more than my beliefs. Some essence, some part of me is more than my beliefs, than my politics, than my economic status, than in all of the isms that want to reduce a human individual to a category. That's a shift in consciousness. I'm more than that. Like, I am, yes, white, male, of Irish descent. I live in Michigan, you know, and whatever. These are all, and you could say, I could start going down the list of where I am on the economic ladder, or if that's what you want to call it, spectrum, and my religious proclivities, my education, and on the and somehow also, I'm more than that. That's partly, at least, how I might define what I mean by common humanity. Just the wild essence of our unique individuality that transcends all of the categories. See, right now we're in a category-obsessed culture on the right and left. What category are you in? How can we put you in this category? How can we deplatform you because you're in that category? You know, on and on and on, category obsession. And spiritual growth, believe it or not, looks like across the religious traditions and spiritual traditions as a disidentification from category. That's like 101. You begin to disidentify from all the various categories. And I think we have to say something like, we ought to honor people's categories. We ought to. We ought to say, what kind of group are you a part of? And we also ought to treat people like, and you're more than that. And that starts at home. I have to start treating myself, my essence, my core, as somehow other than tests I've taken or names I've been called. Nature doesn't have those kinds of categories, if you want to put it that simply. It doesn't have cultural categories, we could say. Okay, number 14. I have two more. Number 14. Be on the hunt for common ground. That's what I'm telling myself. Be on the hunt for common ground. Don't be on the hunt for wild disagreement. Don't be on the hunt for suspicion, darkness, enemy territory. Be on the hunt for common good. Be on the hunt for things we have in common. Like, no one wants to drink poison water. No one wants dirty streets. No one wants the air to be so polluted that our kids can't even ride the bus to school. No one wants all the forests and wild places cut down. No one wants to celebrate lies in the end. No one. No one. I just thought of Jesus's line, you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. That's an interesting phrase. You shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. It's like, even if I don't like the truth, like, let's say someone says something and it's slightly, in my view, a little bit of a conspiracy theory. I think, no, I don't think so. But then it turns out, actually, that was the case, which is like, oh my God. It's like, okay, I don't like the truth, but I feel more free. It's like surrendering to something. I might not like this, but that's the way it is. And anyway, being on the hunt for common good, for truth that we have in common, I think might be more important right now in 2021 than focusing on what everybody says. We're more divided than ever. I want to say, only if you keep saying that. Number 15, a reminder. The vast majority of people are struggling with basic human needs and concerns. The vast majority of people are struggling with basic human needs and concerns. They're trying to pay bills, trying to figure out how to educate their kids, they're trying to take care of aging parents, they're trying to make end-of-life decisions, they're trying to avoid getting sick, they're trying to make doctor's visits, they're trying to get a tooth fixed, they're trying to figure out how to pay off debt that they've accrued because they didn't have any options. That's the vast majority of people, the vast majority of people. And sometimes I just want to tell myself, the other side, in that sense, is just like me, trying to pay off debts that I've accrued, trying to make doctor's appointments, trying to take care of aging parents, whatever. I don't need a tooth fixed right now, but I don't know. And I think it's important to talk like that, to think like that, to remind yourself that that's true, to honor public voices who extend that kind of grace and humanity to other people and say, these are the kinds of leaders we need. So that's it. Those are 15 things that have been knocking around in my head about talking with the other side, being in community with the other side, sitting across the table from the so-called other side, that I hope you found a hint, a guess, a clue, something that to take home, to chew on, and to think about. Thanks for joining us at C3. Thanks for joining us each week. Thanks for supporting us. Deeply honored. I want to wish you well on your own journey. I think if you're listening to this, no matter where you fall, you'd like to keep growing. Whether you use language like I'd like to grow spiritually, or I'd just like to grow up, or I'd like my worldview to expand. And I just want to wish you well and encourage you to keep going. So thanks for listening today, and we'll see you soon.